Blog Talk Radio.
Morning. What's going on, family? What's going on? Welcome to this episode of Radio Establishment Address Life. I'm your host, Levon. It is the, what day is the time, is Barry? It's the fourth day of November. Where the hell? And I'm thinking about this the other day. I'm saying to myself, here we are, first Friday, third, and it's in no time flat that next week we're going to be damn near halfway through the month. Where in the hell is time going? But I'm grateful for it to go, and to hell with all of you who do not like the fall and or the winter. As I'm looking at my grass, I'm saying to myself, thank God I'm saving money week in and week out, because grass grows like weeds down here in Carolina, and I had to pay too much damn money to get my grass cut. Dang near every other week, and that shit just got ridiculous, because as we know, everything is going up but your damn paycheck. And well, I was talking to Brother Barry last night, gas prices are actually going down, happily. I saw a story earlier in the week where there was fears of a barrel breaking 150 a barrel on the New York Stock Exchange, and I'm glad that hasn't hit yet, because I promise you, I really can't afford that right now in my life. I don't know what I would do. I've switched up and started buying food from the Costco. You know, sometimes you can find some good stuff at Costco, and they had some chicken on sale. They had some chicken tenders on sale, and they had some chicken breasts on sale. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to start bringing my lunch, because I was burning through cash buying lunch every day. But, you know, it's one of those things, it's an essential. It's one of those things you got to eat. You really don't think about it. So I'm like, yo, I can spend $15, $20 a day easy on lunch, depending on my mood, so on and so forth. Or I can spend $15 one time and get 2, 3, you know, potentially 4 lunches out of this and keep it going. Well, I bought the damn bag of chicken breasts, and I think it's like 12 of them. And I was like, ooh, that's a win. It was like 10, 15 bucks, something like that. No, but that's a win. And then I bought the chicken nuggets, and I didn't really think it was going to be a whole lot of chicken nuggets. And I really didn't. But then I opened the bag, and I was like, ooh, damn, if I go to Chick-fil-A and get the same damn thing, it's going to be like $10 a pop. And those were on sale for 10 bucks. I mean, I can get a nice little thing out of this. So saving money, ladies and gentlemen, is definitely the key. As, again, you know, we're all struggling to make it out here, even those who are, you know, pretty okay off to do. You know what I'm saying? I was watching a story on 2020. It was, what's the CBS program? Is it 2020? No, it's not 2020. What's the one when they go around all the time, they do all the damn, it's not the Sunday morning show, it's the evening one, whatever. And they were profiling this guy, I think he lived in Texas, And he made over $100,000 a year, and he was still shopping at the dollar store. He was like, yo, like, if I go to a regular grocery store for this shit, I'm going to pay twice the amount of money as I am here. And with everything else going up, I gotta pinch and make it make sense. Posted a story this morning, you know, research is still showing that most Americans are still living paycheck to paycheck. Duh. Some motherfuckers ain't living paycheck to paycheck. They got to bridge that gap with credit if they have that. Or they do the old school method. This shit ain't getting paid the next one. I'm just trying to pay the late fee. And I don't know about you, but I grew up in a household where that shit was common. Like, well, we going to pray these lights stay on until I get paid again. But if they go off, we got the candles. And y'all know what to do. And stuff like that, you know. And it's real for people. That continues to be a situation that too many of us live in and live through day in and day out. And quite frankly, it's ridiculous. So, you know, folks are pushing back on UAW as UAW was pushing for higher wages for their employees. And if you notice, Toyota, BMW across the board gave raises to their employees. Why? Because they knew it was coming. They knew that union organization would start at their facilities if they didn't. So instead of being behind the tie, they got in front of the tie. It's like, there you go. You know what I'm saying? Look. But why? Why does it take such a staunch and strong push for folk to do right? And unfortunately, I think it is capitalism, which Brother Barry has spoke on a number of times. And I think it's just the nature of business. You know, the nature of business is to make as much profit as possible. And you do that by almost any damn means necessary. The nature of some quote-unquote leaders is to do that on the backs of your people at all costs. Others will be like, okay, we can balance this, still get what we want, what we yet still make our people happy. And that is the holy grail, if you will. That is the sweet spot, if you will. That is where a lot of people hope things go, but that normally is just not the case. You know what I'm saying? But I see Sister Rashi's on as well. Morning to you, Brother Barry. Morning to you, Sister Rashi. How you doing?
Doing well, Brother
Barry.
Thanks for having me on. All
right. Hey, Brother Barry, how you doing this week?
Man, I'm doing splendid. I can't complain.
I could, but every time I complain, people start walking away.
Sis, I want to start with you, especially with the economic standpoint. You know, from your experience and the experience of
the
social.
It's funny you should say that. Hold on to the question, because I want to let you know something. Last week, I taught economics. I have a life science class that I teach on Friday. And so this last Friday was a projection into, because my children are 10 years old, 10 and 11. So I had them push themselves into 2035. As of 2035, it ain't nobody's fault but who? Theirs. If they did it, they did it. If they didn't, they didn't. They'll be 21 and 22 years old, right? Well, 22 some and 23. I had a couple of late bloomers in the class. Anyway, so as part of that, I put my salary on there. I put how much I make per week, how much my bills come to a month, how much I pay, you know, and how much I end up in savings. Do you know that a child of mine went home and told their parent, and the parent called the Board of Education on me?
What? Why? How does that make sense? So what was
my
the complaint
called,
that they lodged?
My principal called me into the office and told me that I have a parent requested that I need to talk to my principal meeting because I reported how much I make and how much via the internet, and I showed them how to do a budget analysis for a month. It was a division assignment, by the way. You get this much per year, how much per month,
right.
Okay, how much per check, fine. Then
mm-hmm.
these are your bills for that month. How are you going to balance it? If you know your check ain't going to cover the full mortgage, I had to explain to them what's the difference between renting a unit and what is a mortgage. And we didn't even get into life insurances and paying back your student loan debt. We stopped at the mortgage, the bills, and the car, okay? And it upset some of my parents so much that they called the principal. And when she didn't react, they called the Board of Education.
Okay, but again, but what was the offense? What was their complaint?
Is what I asked my
boss. I'm trying
boss.
To get to that.
I see, and listen, you and I both. You and I both, honestly. And the only thing I could imagine is the fact that how paltry my pay is embarrassed them. Or the fact that they then went home and asked them how much they make or something like that, right? Maybe the full transparency of the matter was the problem. I really don't know, but I had to have a come-to-Jesus meeting with my principal this week over parents not going to her. They didn't bother with her. That was a waste of their time. They went straight to the board.
Well, what did she say?
She pulled me into the office and told me what had happened. She told me, she asked me what that was about. I showed her the assignment on my computer. Thankfully, I had it with me. I showed her 60 different assignments where children have projected themselves into the future. I told her that there was a rash of suicides amongst our population, and that part of the assignment was to have them thinking about existing in 2035, period. Let's start there. And then, if you want to be a doctor, you cannot keep fucking around in my class. I'm a math and science teacher. Not only that, whatever it is you wanted to be, I forwarded those assignments to their parents so that I let them know, if you know you got somebody who want to be a quarterback, right? And you seeing them on Saturday do absolutely fucking nothing but eat snacks all day, you need to tell them, I ain't trying to be funny, but most quarterbacks don't start off on Saturday with a bag of snacks. They be somewhere doing something.
They be out there quarterbacking.
They be out there throwing. And not
it's
only
about
that,
practicing.
The daddy be
right.
out
it's
there. The daddy be out there doing what he's. Okay, so never mind. So we can talk in economy. So I just need you to hear that. It's so bad that the people who have, they don't even want their children aware of those who don't have.
But going back to my question, though, and it did not dawn on me until now to ask you specifically because of where you're located. So transparency, Brother Barry and I had a conversation briefly. He doesn't know exactly what I'm going to say. We didn't go in depth into it about this yesterday. And one of the things, he made a comment about we didn't have a conversation about this. We were talking about something else. And he made a comment about the state of affairs in Minnesota and how they are 501c3 heavy, and they are all 501c3 babies up there. And we were talking about money, the disbursement of money in general. And I was like, oh, we were talking about entrepreneurs. That's what we were talking about. Yeah. Thank you, Brother Barry. We were talking about entrepreneurs, and I was like, well, yo, it's a shitload of entrepreneurs where I'm from. You know what I'm saying? Where I'm from, hustling is the norm. Which, again, I've said this a gazillion times, but it's true, dog. Like, that causes a problem when we move away. Because when we move away, most of us have a hustler's mentality. And that mentality is, I left where I was, I'm not going back. I'm not going back because I failed. I'm going back because I choose. So we will come to a new spot, and we're going to take up all the jobs. We're going to take 2-3 of them off. And look, I am not losing. I am not going back with my hat in my hand because I failed. I always say that about Atlanta. And one of the problems with Atlanta is too many Northerners moved down. So they taking up all the damn jobs. So the cats that are from Atlanta, homegrown, they sitting at the house like, well, what the hell am I supposed to do? And that's why they breaking in your house and breaking in your car and stuff like that. That's why Atlanta has so much damn small petty crime. But that mentality, that drive, if you will, that mindset, whatever the hell you want to call it, helps folk avoid pitfalls. But even with that, again, in the state of the economy that we exist, when constantly the goalpost is being moved, you know what I'm saying? Folks in my category, folks in Brother Barry's category 30 years ago, hell, shit, 20 years ago, would be enjoying a very good life right now. Very good life. And not that we're not enjoying a good life as good as it should be. And we're doing the things that America has told us we're supposed to do to live that very good life. And we're looking around now like, yo, what the fuck? Like, are you serious right now? So I've done the training bit, the school bit, the working, whatever, to bring in that income that you tell me I need to bring so I can live that very good life. And I get to the end of the rainbow, if you will, and it's like, nah, dog, you still got another six steps to go. How the hell does that work? You know, not self-defeating, but how do you feel at the end? You know what I'm saying? How do you process that? How do you take that in? Like, I've given everything plus some. I've sacrificed self. I've sacrificed friends. I've sacrificed family. I've sacrificed a whole lot of things, a whole lot of situations in order to get myself here. So in here should be now, I should be sitting back like, okay, yeah, I know I had to put all these things to the side. Yeah, I know I couldn't do this. No, I couldn't make the past 7 family reunions. No, I couldn't make the past 10 birthdays. No, I couldn't do this. I couldn't do that. But now, boom, I should be able to. And it's still like, fuck, I still can't do it? Seriously? How does that, how do we balance that out? Brother Barry, what you got?
For myself, I think the best way to try to balance it out is to understand that it's hard to be everything. So there's going to be things that simply by having some of the finer things in life or some of the advantages, there come disadvantages. The main thing is, how do you minimize the disadvantages, right? I was watching this conversation with, I think his brother's name is Fred Taylor, and he was being interviewed, and somebody was saying, hey, you know, being a person that made it to the NFL, that makes you one of the most powerful people that folks in your family or in your circle may come across. And he said, yes, but it also makes me one of the more vulnerable people as well. And I think that's the one thing that you always bump up against. So how do you balance that out, and how do you surround yourself not only with people but also good habits to make that balance? Because a lot of times we find ourselves trying to do everything when we probably, with some of the advantages that we have, should learn how to do less. And I know that sounds crazy for black folks about doing less, but less may mean less in the community and in the environment, and you may need to spend more with the advantages inside of your home and with your family. But it's just a balancing act, and everybody has their own way. I was sitting there thinking about it. I said, man, you can't name any great civil rights leader, activist, protagonist, politician, millionaire, entertainer that didn't fall short on something. They all fall short in very important things. And I'm not talking about this drug addiction or alcoholism. I'm talking about either you're super successful and you don't have a relationship with your kids. You're super successful, but your intimate relationships are trash. You're very powerful, right? But nobody likes you, right? Because you have this personality quirk. But you're good at what you do. You you know, look at Dr. King, for instance. As great as he was, infidelity was an issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And him and Malcolm alike, as great as they were, think about their greatness and how it cost them their lives and how they weren't able to be there for their children. So we just have to look at it from a balanced perspective and then try to have as much balance as possible and then tail off so much from being public, in my perception. We want to make sure once you get to a certain level, Lee, you want to make sure you spend more time with your family and friends and the people who really do love you than the strangers that you may call yourself trying to save.
Another thing that I've always said with those cats too, you know, most of them have been extremely lucky in love. You know what I'm saying? Because they've had great women hold down whatever side they took next time. You know, I think about Denzel and how Denzel talks about his wife and just how he acknowledges the
effort he don't play about Paulette.
That she put in to push him forward, to keep him grounded, to make sure that he got to where he is now. He acknowledges that all the time. Same as Samuel. Samuel doesn't do it as often or in public, but if you read his interviews, he does the same. And I would say the same about our dearly departed, and I would love to say in my head, a great friend of the show, Bernie Mac, because Bernie, if you read his autobiography, and I promise you all, please get that brother's autobiography. He loved his wife. He talked about just how she too kept him grounded, and
Courtney loved him from Angie.
That's a different level, though. But that's a different level. And Angela Bassett was already established, and she was Angela Bassett when she married Courtney Vance.
And Paulette pulled Denzel's ass up. Paulette's family was it was Boulé. So what you're talking about is this unison, right? What happens when you are with a like-minded black woman? Or what are you talking about?
No, what I'm talking about is the power of love and how folks understand their assignment. And they don't give up in an instant because it's not what they want it to be now. I'm talking about the power of lasting love and coupled with understanding and grace. So that's what I'm talking about. Because remember, Sam was a drug addict with his wife. They still together. Hell, if you want to talk about understanding and grace, you have no further examples to look at than Magic Johnson and his wife. This motherfucker was announced to have HIV. He's still with his wife.
See, Cookie understood. What kind of man she had in the beginning. He didn't just start cheating. Cookie know that she had a whole different agenda. And I don't think if somebody told Cookie back in the day before she had met Magic that she was going to have to make that degree of sacrifice that she would have bought in. But she grew to love him because of the amount of work he decided to put in. And what I like, Lee, is that men are starting to realize it. When you listen to Shaq could tell you, oh, man, I fucked that up, bro. That was a good woman. I couldn't understand that. And he's not the only one. There are several black men who have had to, you know, I'm pretty sure Michael Jordan, since he's still talking to his wife on a regular basis, you know what I'm saying, ex-wife, sorry, that would tell you, had I been thinking correctly, you know, especially financially about what all those women come with, especially if they get pregnant by you down the line. It's not just cheaper to keep her. It's smarter to keep her. It's just logically smarter to work with someone you have vested time and money in and with than it is to keep hopping person to person, asking them to do what that other person used to do when you did what you used to do.
I got you. Well, I would say that maturity, I would say that age and wisdom matters, but I get what you're going about, Denzel, from the aspect of building from the ground up. It's a lot harder when you're building from that ground up and you don't have those days where, you know, success is always there, right? And your wife is supporting you. She got your back. And, you know, and then, by the way, she's an actress too, but she's willing to say, hey, I see what you're doing. I'm going to support you. Let's keep going. Let's keep having that faith in each other. And it's a level of synergy that you must have. And I think that that's the power truly of love, though, right? Like true love. Because a lot of times we always talk about love and self, but I do believe that a lot of the self-love conversation is almost rooted in the taking love away from other people. I think you can love yourself as well as other folks just as well, too, right? You just don't want to be a victim of the people that you love. But I do see that, especially with the financial situations, and I keep saying this, we're going to have to make some emotionally mature decisions to survive, because it's better to make the choice than to be forced into a situation. And when you talk about ourselves and what Rashi was saying about wealthy people not wanting their children to know about the people who don't have, that's because it's easier to avoid that conversation, because if wealthy people today really had to talk about how they made their money, the one thing that they really don't like to use in verbiage, but is the fact, is that they take advantage of people who have less than. That's really their key to making money. People are inventing. What's the latest thing that equates to the microwave that happens that we brought into our home? The air fryer, right? That's about it.
The air fryer. They got like 20 different ones now.
Right. But we don't have a lot of new, and my point is, we don't have a lot of new inventions where people are producing products in the state that we're saying, okay, this is how I made my money. You see my product? I sold you this product. Most of the people that are making a lion's share of the money are middle people. They get the money. So Rashi wants the product. Rashi comes holler at me. I put a 15% charge on Rashi, but Lee is the one that's making the product. Lee don't get the 15%. He's selling it at his standard price. I get the 15%. Rashi has to pay that tax to me, as well as the state, the Fed, and et cetera. That's where a lot of these dollars are coming from. So that's why we don't have this discussion. And then the other side of it, as we talked before, the single household, or, you know, all of us kind of living and loving ourselves in these silos, we end up paying more for everything. We pay more for electric. We pay more for gas. We pay more because if we had two people paying for one, the money would be less and we would be able to save more.
Bro, I was going there, and I'm glad you broached it. You are absolutely right. It's that, too, is holding us back, and it literally is killing us. Like, I was going to play the role of Rodney Smith this morning. He's not on yet, but I was going to play the Rodney Smith role. Like, one of the things that is hurting us dearly, is the fact that we're not, I believe I'm quoting you, Rashi, correctly, we're not coupling. It's like, oh, this system is not built for one. It's not. And if you say you want to mate up with friends or family, okay, that's your choice. Go for it. But we got to do something different. And because if not, we're literally going to work ourselves to death. And I know some people that are running away from that reality by being Instagram famous or TikTok famous. Every time you turn around, they someplace different. They want to be here. They want to be there. Bye, 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 bye. You all know my travel schedule. I share it with you all. You all see me posting that shit on Instagram every place I go. Do I not normally do it a week, maybe 2 weeks after I come back? I'm not TikTok famous. Yeah. I'm not posting up photos of me driving down Rodeo.
And we really need to talk about rodeo on the show. We need to talk about this new reality, the new reality of creating content. The content creator, because some would say, what are we doing but creating content, right? However,
but we're also passing information,
really,
viable information.
Kind of viable information.
Actionable,
applicable information.
Right.
That's what we try to coin ourselves on, right? All right. But there is a whole new realm out there, and they just entertainment. It's just something to do on the internet or watching it as if it's actionable and applicable. So we need to discuss this, fully with people who, I'll go out and look for some kind of media person that I can find. But there is something happening now, this phenomena, and we kind of tapped on it about 6 months ago, where you could just be in a store buying a head of cabbage, and then all of a sudden you will be on the internet because that person is craving content. They doing stuff like tapping, engaging you in a store, and you don't even know. You don't even know that you're going to be uploaded on somebody else's content creator list. And so we need to start talking about this, Lee. What does it mean? What does it mean to be a person who lives out what I call living out loud? Because you would be surprised how many relationships, all this coupling we talking about, he don't want all them pictures, or she don't want all those pictures, but they do. They don't want video of them cooking or what they ate after or pictures of the food, but they do. They don't want you to put your phone up during a concert. They want you to enjoy the concert, but the other person cannot enjoy the concert without video footage of that they were at the concert. And so what do you do? What do you do with this divide between people of the live quietly and the live out loud?
Well, again, we spoke on this a bit last night, too, because I was talking about how folks need to get more social. And we went in with the video, I don't know if you've seen it or not. There was somebody off camera telling Jay-Z, hey, man, I would take the $500,000, not the meeting. And my response was, I would take the meeting because money is about relationships, you see. And this is where I think too many people are missing the boat. You can be wealthy. No, that's a lie. You can be rich and do okay. You can be wealthy if you know the right people. There's a difference between being rich and wealthy. The wealthy write the rich paycheck. The wealthy give the rich a slice, maybe a half a slice. They get more than crumbs, but they don't get the whole pie at all. So I would take the meeting because, again, it's about building relationships. And those relationships will always keep you in the know as to what is and what's not happening and where you should and or shouldn't be, not only with your time but also your money. That money, quickly, Brother Barry, I'm going to let you defend your position. But I will say this before you start. Coming here, and it may just be here, right? Because I learned about 4 months in that Charlotte, North Carolina, is the most expensive city in the entire fucking state of North Carolina. Now, how did my fucking broke soda ass wind up in the caviar capital of North Carolina? I have no idea, but that's where I wound up at. But that old nomer, that old mentality about how cheap life is in the South, that shit is gone. Now, your taxes are definitely cheaper, but dog, and the houses are relatively cheaper, yes. But them days are coming down here and, buying up a block for potentially the amount you living in your one house for, or even half the block. No, that shit gone, dog. That shit gone. That shit is gone. Like, houses down here are expensive. No, not expensive as being up top, but they are expensive, and they're getting even more pricey by the day. But that's because so many people are flooding down here to avoid those higher taxes, those higher this, the higher that, the lower temperatures, whatever. You know what I'm saying? So that's the actual reality. That old school shit where, you know, like, oh, son, I can kill it down south. You might make a shooting. But I don't know if you're going to make a killing, son. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can make a shooting. Oh, yeah, you can hit something. Oh, you can hit something. Oh, yeah, you going to body them. I don't know if they're going to die, though. And I'm just keeping that real. But go ahead, sir. Say what you had to say.
Well, I was just saying that I would, you know, I would take the $500,000. And I would say that most people would. Now, myself, I could have that dinner with Jay-Z, make some connections, very sociable. But I do know that most people don't really know how to socialize. And they don't have etiquette like we grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people would take that dinner and would ruin they would ruin that encounter. So they would be better off taking that money and buying a home for themselves or their families. Because a lot of people, especially in this neck of the woods, like in the Twin Cities, you only have a 25% black home ownership rate. So that's a lot different than having a dinner and then having a chance for Jay-Z to connect you if he likes you, if you hit it off. We don't have a lot of personable people in this iTunes, iPad, iPhone era. Folks are very self-absorbent. And they may not make for the best lunch and dinner mate when it comes to business. So while I would say it's a great opportunity, if you want to make it that way, the other side of it is it can be very disastrous if you don't have that skill set. So I would always say you go with the cash and then try to better your family. You could buy a home in the Midwest for $300,000 and then have $200,000 to play with. Now, would that be just as dope as talking to Jay-Z and gleaning some of that knowledge? No, I'm a person who believes that you're always in the classroom, you're always learning. No, it would not be. However, I would say that for this current climate of folk, they don't always know how to turn it. They're going to be, like I told Lee, I said, they're going to be taking pictures with Jay-Z toes and their sandals, okay? That's what they're going to be doing.
They're going to be going live,
taking selfies, you know, talking about content game, right? They're going to say it's competition content, though, right? And they're going to ask him, they're probably going to spend most of the time, brother, asking him about the beef between him and Damon Dash, then asking him, how do I take this idea and turn this into a profitable situation? And so while I believe that in essence, when we talk to business-minded people, they have questions that they would ask Hove, I would say that the people who don't have that type of mindset, they would just waste it.
I got you. Rashi, what would you do? Would you take the money or would you take the meat?
Well, even Jay-Z will tell you to take the money. Okay, and he'll tell you why. What you do with the money is you create opportunities, hopefully, that will get you in touch with said people or will make the grassroots impact that will capture his attention, and he'll come to you. Because let me let you know, that old man with all them damn kids ain't got a whole bunch to do but go home to his wife and that hateful mother-in-law of his and get up in that family and get it right before his sister-in-law slap the shit out of him again. You know what I'm saying?
Again?
So he is
actually...
Why
you calling that woman Angel?
Because she ran that poor man off so fast. Poor Mr. Lawson didn't even make it a whole 2 years in there with that dynasty. They almost probably worse than the Kardashians because she didn't burn through Mr. Knows, who was he's a little ignorant. I ain't trying to say nothing. Y'all don't know Matthew Knows. Y'all haven't probably studied Mr. Knows like I did. And then she had that sweet little old fella, Mr. Lawson, and he couldn't even hold down. They ran him through. It's too much action happening in that family. And so Jay-Z is in it, though. He's part of the action. He's almost like Kanye Light or something. It's a weird dynamic. But what he's looking for is to stay relevant. He wants to stay relevant. How do you stay relevant? He's a man of the pen, right? He writes his lyrics. He brings. Uh-huh. He's a man of words. He's a man of words. They call him, right? All right. So uh-huh. If you want to have your words ring true in the ears of the people who you're talking to, then you have to go affiliate yourself with the actual cause of the struggle or whoever it is putting it down in the street. Whoever's, because he ain't in the streets. He got three kids.
Right.
And a superstar wife. And that, you know, that whole situation at home. And then he's, you know, an aging rapper.
What are you talking about?
Well, we, first of all, the fact that we know his home business, that he's a cheater, that he's done, you know, that kind of, and that he's had to atone, and that he's on the maturity tour, the apology, I'm a grown man, I got to learn, you know, get about my money tour. All that is the tenets of the new age rapper.
You don't think that's over? When I mean, that was like, shit, how long ago was that, bro?
Right, for you, because you're a man, but there are some people who want to kill him still for cheating on Beyonce. How dare you? How could you? She has it. That woman has a, now the word is fan, right? But the root word is fanatic, as in fanatical, as in posters on the wall, buys more than one album at a time, knows what the woman is eating for lunch and all that crazy. You understand? Is on the Beyonce diet. Is what I'm saying. And so there are people who really care or, you know, are invested in the woman's life. So what I'm trying to explain is this. Some of Jay-Z's power is borrowed. I'm going to just say it. I'm not going to equivocate that. It's borrowed power. And the place he borrows it from has a lot of work affiliated with it. He's a father, he's a, you know, husband to a superstar, and blah, 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 right? So then he's also a street rapper. He's a hood. He don't want to be considered, well, now he hip-hop, but when he started out gangster rap. Or maybe, I don't know. Is it me? Or did he start off like he was a man of the street, like in the street, hood, if you keep playing? It'll be your turn, and he'll be the one giving it, huh?
I think it's always been hip hop. It was gangster rap. Hardcore, I would say. I wouldn't necessarily label Jay-Z as a gangster.
You wouldn't go
rapper.
Gangster.
Jay-Z would.
Now this is some
no,
because
Jay-Z.
You wouldn't go gangster. You would go hardcore hip hop.
Yes, because Jay-Z didn't talk about, I'm going to kill your mama, and blah, 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 blah. He was literally talking about his days in the streets. He wasn't speaking as though he was still on the block whipping up that rock. He was saying, like, this is what I did to get to where I am. Boom. Now, his first album was called Reasonable Doubt. Honestly, I think that one should have been more labeled the blueprint than anything, because it was really an album about what did happen in the streets to ascend him to the level that he was, so that he could then turn and try to get his life right. He wasn't saying that I'm going back to the trap. He never said that. Like, it was all about him getting out. And that's the difference between rappers in our era and in this era. Like, these kids are talking about running in. All I was trying to get the hell out. You know what I'm saying? our MCs were drug dealers. These motherfuckers are drug users. Like, I don't even get that shit. Like, what?
No,
so you are willing
to? They were drug users too. They just didn't rap about it.
But they didn't rap about it. Right. They didn't rap about it. They weren't all here talking about they popping mollies or fish, whatever.
Yeah, that's weird to me too.
They
weren't
out here talking
about
how
to being a smoker. Like,
what?
But Rashi, I want to say something that you just said to him. And I feel like this is where our young people get in trouble. So Lee said, our rappers wasn't rapping about that, and they wasn't. And you said, oh yeah, but they were using it. That's what kids use to excuse their behavior. I just saw Kaya, who went off on what's the girl, Sexy Red.
Uh-huh.
And Kaya said, I was talking about them licking my front and my back, not me doing it to them. Like, we way different,
right?
And she's right. There's a level of decorum, I feel, that we would call the shine. I think the shine is kind of off with reality TV and social media. We don't have a level of seeing entertainers as stars anymore. They're not stars or even superstars. We kind of see them for their average, everyday thing. We talk about Beyonce and cheating. Right, there's no mystery to them, right? We know everything about them. How much did you really know about Michael Jackson? How much did you really know about Prince? Right? Like, you didn't know much about them. You know, Whitney Houston, once she got with Bobby and they exposed their personal life to reality TV and all the other things came out that were, like, formatively true, at that point there, Whitney even stopped being a superstar. She was a superstar when nobody knew anything about her, right? Take Mariah Carey and Nick Cannon. Mariah had to leave Nick. Because if you think about it, her star, her superstardom, she was starting to fall. Why? Because he's the one that wants to tell everything. She ain't telling everything. She doesn't say much. She was school, going back to etiquette again. What's the etiquette of being a superstar? Do you really tell as much as you should?
It's a mystery.
We wouldn't know if Denzel cheated on Paulette or not. They have etiquette. They have ways of going about it. They're not going to argue in public. They're not going to invite us into their bedroom, into their differences or any of that. Look at Will and Jada. Will doesn't do a lot of the talking. Look at the one that's doing all the talking. She's not the superstar.
The broken.
He is. But you see how as much as she is, what she wants us to see, she wants us to see him as a regular person. Why? Because that puts him on her level. I think Rashi used the term equally yoked, right? Well, this is that example of when somebody else got more yolk in the egg than the other one, the other person is drilling a small hole in the bottom of your egg to
It's the sign of just the imbalanced power, the borrowing of power, and the ability to say, yeah, it ain't no he, it's we. It ain't no she, it's we. We are the Carters. We are the Smiths. We are the Bass Advancers. I don't know what that's about. Anyway,
do you think it's them saying that we are the Carters and we are the Smiths, or do you think it is them saying? And let's be honest, the whole Beyonce, Jay-Z situation, we only know because Solange, who is also not a star, right? She's just the sister of a superstar.
She had the situation
with Jay-Z. Beyonce made a song about it. We talking about Becky with the good hair. How do we know it was even a Becky with the good hair? We don't know. But they took
I don't
it.
Know.
They ran off of it because remember what Michael Jackson said? Hey, you say I slept with the elephant man bone, so be it. I ain't here to argue with you. Whatever you say,
if that makes sense to you, that's what I got time to do all motherfucking day, then let's do it. Because I can't prove something that didn't happen. You cannot prove non-happenings. It's just a fact. You can prove something did, but you'll never prove it didn't.
But think about it. We've never, when they say Becky with the good hair, we've never, nobody ever came out to play the role of Becky. It's been assumption. And so what I'm saying with all of these successful people who are really superstars, Jay-Z is still a superstar. Beyonce is still a superstar. They don't have reality TV. They hardly are on social media talking.
Yeah.
That's how superstars
know.
Are. Becky Red got a sex tape out. Is that really a superstar?
Yeah. Right. What does it take? Now, here's my deal. Okay, you mentioned the young lady Ty earlier. And I was like, this is weird because, okay, it's like when the English came, when the Spanish came to America, they was like, this is ours. And then the English came and they was like, this is ours. And then the English tried to close the door behind them, like, nah, ain't nobody else coming over. And then I was like, well, the Spanish could have did that too. They could have closed the door too and been like, nah, you can't come. And so eventually everybody, he said, fuck it. Look, look, anybody can come. Everybody but the Africans could come. And they was like, why can't we come? And they was like, okay, some of you can come. All right, again, all right, everybody can come. Wait, nobody can come. And then it's like, look, why y'all keep opening and closing this gate on who can and cannot come? And so she opened some of it. Kai don't realize that my neck, my back, look, my pussy, and my crack was a definitive song that had young ladies getting in trouble for singing it, so which means it was inappropriate. With nobody's mama, like, girl, come here and dance to this song, and it was that song. No, nobody with any type of etiquette. Come on, Sue Thomas, with a word of the day. The word is etiquette. Anybody with etiquette would know when you're listening to music that's supposed to be played in parlors or nightclubs or, you know what I'm saying, you, at parties after the children have been told to go to their room or to sleep or to their auntie's house or their holy auntie house, all right? And so once you understand etiquette, Lee, Barry, Mr. Rodney, once you get it down in your household, what it look like for y'all, then you know that meeting a person, yeah, you meet Jay-Z, and then what? You met Jay-Z. $500,000 starts small businesses. It funds seed ideas. It makes it can be reinvested to improve quality of life. It has a direct, immediate fix to some of the woes of being, you know, of a socioeconomic status. And so meeting Jay-Z, even if he say he going to hook you up with a job, he probably not going to hook you up with a $500,000 job in any immediate terms. He not going to keep giving that away. So think about it. You have to use your logic. What can one do? What can the other do? But what I don't like is telling somebody that, what was that flex? What was that flex?
What you mean?
I was thinking about that. And yes, you are right. $500,000 can go a long way. But are we not too short-term of thinking as a norm here in America where, yeah, I'm looking at the potential of even more and more and more infinitely by building that relationship, by fostering that relationship. You know, not going to name drop, but we talked about this last night. There are folks whom I've gotten close to enough to that there have been blessings that have come just from those relationships. So I value relationships much more than I value it all. Because, again, I feel, I think I know that money is more relationship-based. Real money is more relationship. Because when you know a guy, that guy will turn you on to the other guy. Don't know. That guy, it's like the movie Goodfellas. You know what I'm saying? He's a good fella. Oh, he's a good fella. Oh, okay. Well, Lee, look. We're coming to your city. we're about to do blah, 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 boom. Look, man, I know you have a podcast. We got X amount of dollars in the advertising budget. I'm going to make sure, look, take this number down, call this person. I'm going to make sure that they understand that you get at least 10% of that budget. At least 10%, because you know my man. And all we want to do every now and again is check in to make sure you're advertising what we're about to do. That's it, 10%. Just because you know a guy. You know a guy to introduce you to another guy. You know a guy to introduce you to a girl. You know a girl to introduce you to a guy. However it works, that's how money moves. It really does. And I see it, understand it, promise to you, I agree. If you're not that person that can sit in a meeting, have a meeting, conduct yourself well in the meeting, take the money. Take the money. But I would take it with the caveat, like, can I have the money? And then when I'm done doing what I would like to do, can I at least have you check in on me to make sure that I put the money to the use? So at least, hopefully, that will lead to a meeting at some point. You know what I'm saying? But definitely, if that's not you, I get it. Take the money and go about your business. But if it is you, take that damn meeting. Was it Meek Mill? No, it wasn't Meek Mill. What was the kid's name that Jay-Z tried to put on forever and he just did not catch on? Oh.
That was Meek. No, you're talking about Memphis Bleek.
Memphis Bleek? Yeah, Memphis Bleek. Yep, Memphis Bleek. Memphis Bleek, when he said, here's a thousand. Cool. A thousand stacks for me? Nah, I'd rather give you his life free. You know what I'm saying? Building relationships, dog. You know what I'm saying? This kid was talking about, there was a video I saw a little while ago, a year or so ago. He was talking about somebody introduced him to AI. And over the years, he got really, really close to AI. Well, AI came to visit Allen Iverson. I'm sorry, see you all like, who the hell is AI? Allen Iverson came to visit, and the kid was with Allen Iverson. And he was basically his bag man. Well, Allen Iverson was leaving, and he said, well, he left the bags with me. He said, okay. He said, no. If he came back, I think he got his jewelry out of the bag, but everything else he left. He said, well, what was in the bag? He was like, it was like 50 grand. He left me with like 50 grand just for holding his bag. That's what it's about. This kid was just tagging along. He was a good fella. He was a good dude. And because he was a good dude, he was blessed. That's how real money works. It works. It's all relationship-based. All relationship-based. Donnie hit me this morning. There's the 21st anniversary of Be More News, and it's going to be a Black Wall Street presentation in Baltimore on the 9th of December. I'm trying to plot my way up there because I have to be in Florida for my niece's graduation. So if I can make it work, I'm going to make it work. But he's going to have one of the most influential Black lawyers in the state of Maryland as the guest speaker. You know what I'm saying? I know this dude. I've met this dude more than once, Mr. Murphy. I've met this dude more than once. He's cooler than the damn fan, dog. This dude will walk around in some jeans and a blazer, and you'll think he's just a regular dude. Because he is. That's how he carries himself. That's how he projects himself out. And that's important to know and to understand. You know what I'm saying? But, again, I know this dude. So now I'm trying to move things around. I need to be in that room because I know there's going to be some other people in that room. And how that can pay off for us in the short and the long is what I'm looking at. You dig? I mean, I have a direct line to the damn director of the airport in the state of Maryland because of the relationship that I built through this one. You dig? I'm trying to convince that motherfucker to help me do some other stuff. I'm like, yo, dog. And, you know, he keeps laughing at me, but he knows I'm serious. He's like, Lee, you kill him. I'm like, yo, I'm serious, dog. Like,
So maybe not the time, but who knows? You know, it might just pay off. It may not pay off in the now, but hopefully it'll pay off in the later. You know what I'm saying? I'm privy, not just through him, but in general, I'm privy to information before most people know because of the relationships that I've built. I made a donation just the other day to Bigatti. Bigatti is a family shelter in Maryland. They help folks who are down, out, to get back on their feet, so on and so forth. So I made a donation through my work and whatnot. So I got a phone call the next day from the director. And she was like, bro, what's going on? I said, hey, what's going on? Blah, blah, blah. And she was just talking. She was like, hey, I wanted to let you know. I haven't made it public yet, but we're moving to Cherry Hill. I know that's where you grew up at. So I wanted to let you know we're coming down there because the facility we normally use for our Thanksgiving drive isn't going to be available. And I was like, oh, shit, I thought you called me about the donation. She was like, what the hell are you making donation? Yo, I did it yesterday. Because you calling me today? I thought it was the one that she was like, no, but thank you. But, you know, I really wanted to break the news to you before I made it public. I was like, that. The next day, I get online, boom, the story's public. They're going to Cherry Hill for their Thanksgiving Day joint. It's stuff like that, y'all. Again, I totally agree. Totally agree. If you're not that type of person, if you're not social, if you think you're going to blow it, then, you know, I wouldn't blow a sure thing or a maybe thing at all. But if you're that type of person that's going to get that room and work that room, work it. Absolutely. I would not blow that opportunity because that will pay off forever and ever and ever and ever. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, I wanted to transition a bit to stay in that vein, but to go into one of the topics for today, which is gender wars. So I said, yo, I think I cracked the code. I think I finally know why women hate men. And Thomas said, why you talk to me? What's going on? I said, yo, women hate men because the babies that they carry for 9 months that they love, they protect, they uplift. It's the apple of their eye. The first word out that baby's mouth is dad bath. That's what it is. It got to be it. That has to be the answer. This is the reason that women hate men. Because no matter how good that man is, no matter how horrible that man is, the very first thing out of their mouth is dad bath. They love their dad bath. They want to be around that, period. And I said that. I'm watching a video that I saw on Instagram, and a young lady was playing with her daughter. And she had the baby turned around, so both of them were watching the camera. And she was more focused, I guess, on her laptop or desktop, whatever. She's talking to the baby, and the baby's giggly, da-da-da-da-da. All of a sudden, that baby, that little mama just got quiet. Little mama peeked, and she peeked again. And when she peeked that second time, her mother said, you must have seen your father. That must be your dad. And that little girl paid no attention to her mother from that moment forward. She was totally locked in on her daddy, and that's all she cared about. And I was like, yeah, that has to be crushing. It has to be crushing that this person who lived inside of you for months and months on end loves another motherfucker more than they love you. Unconditional. Rashi, am I even close to the mark on that one? You're the only person.
I insisted on it. I insisted on it. Go to your daddy, baby. He knows best. What I find is that if he do that, when you do that, at least when he say, I ain't come, I'm finna go buy a pack of cigarettes. Them be some hard smokes that he take, I tell you that. Because we know them kids love him like that. When you know that your children are invested in your time and interest, you don't sign off on them so easy. You know what I'm saying, Lee? So I insisted on it. I'm the bad guy. He's the great guy. Love him, want him, need him, crave him, call him, write him. And if anything by chance happens not to be right, you also have a secondary level of support in me. And I'll come through for you every goddamn time. And I mean that. Take it to the bank. So that's how I set it up, because I found when women start to, that's my baby and all that. That's right. That is your baby and your baby alone. And when they step off, they be moving on to women who make babies who do a supreme attachment to them. And I want to discuss that, not just how vested men can be when the child does attach, but what happens when you feel like maybe your children haven't vested in you and you could, like, be gone for a little while and it not truly matter. I'd like to talk about that as well. But, yeah, I pushed it. I hand men their babies within four or five hours of birth. Here you go. I'll pump the milk for you. I'll do whatever you need, baby, to get in with this offspring, because to me, a man who's responsible for his offspring is just a smarter, a kinder, gentler human. When you find men where they don't want you around their kids, it's something to people who say, no, I don't really deal with kids. I don't really want to be around kids. And so I'd be looking like, why? I mean, not that you're supposed to gravitate to them like you're a pervert or something, just children should not piss you off immediately. You should get to know the actual individual child and then get pissed off. You know what I'm saying? But the actual essence of them being a child shouldn't piss you off and make you frustrated or make you feel on edge or anxious. Because it's like you denying your previous self and something that still lives within. All of us have children within, right? It's something of childish of us all. But more to the point, all right, so you've nurtured this baby. It was literally, and I want to say back in the day that was a harder thing to do because the baby had to come to you for sustenance and nutrients. And so now it's in the bottle. So both of y'all can feed the baby, right? Because women ain't breastfeeding like they used to. And even if they do, they'll pump it into the thing so both of y'all can feed the baby. So if both of y'all feed the baby, both of y'all changing the baby, both of y'all getting up in the night with the baby, what you're looking at is an attachment to the sonic boom. And let me tell you, it's something to the man's voice. Even when I'm in the classroom, I'm like, hey, sit down. You understand? I don't be like, hey, sit down. No, that don't work. Hey, sit down. You understand? That works. The sonic boom of the man's voice, like the hum, like the earth hum or something. I can't explain it, but y'all have it. Y'all have it in y'all's voice. It's comforting. It's soothing. It's way down low. Y'all know Barry White had it. Lou Rawls had it. It's something, you know, I don't know what it is. Right. Y'all know what I'm talking about, though. You know right. what I'm talking about, though.
All men have it, brother.
Yeah, but you got it more, bro. You got, hey, we're going on. I'm like, God damn.
So I'm a baby, and I'm listening. I'm a young person. I'm a young soul early, and I'm listening to that hum. I love you so much, little baby. Oh, but, and hey, that's a bond. And her voice is like, okay. So that hum, that frequency, that lower frequency, it's real. And it's some people who sleep to it at night. Just a like that, because it is a comforting sonic frequency. But more than that, y'all the most overindulgent, overaccepting, extremely gift-giving, over-nurturing when y'all there. The kid can't do no wrong. Whatever they want, they can have. Whatever they want. They want to get in your lap, they get in your lap. They want to sit on your shoulders, they sit on your shoulders. They want to put makeup on you, you get the makeup out. You are, as men, so permissive with young children. It's a switch to get turned in later when they start acting up in school. That's when y'all like, sit down, quit doing that. But other than that, babies can run around men, jump off the table, jump from the table to the couch, off the kitchen counter, onto the dining room table, from there to the couch. And y'all be like, good one, John. Yay, you made it. It is just a different level of acceptance of behavior with men. And women don't want you jumping on their shit. And so if you ask me, you think it's something inherent. I say it's something in the sonic boom of the man's voice. The fact that now we don't have a one-way nurturing system. Y'all get the bottle in the mouth too. So the baby can associate that sustenance with both people. And third, y'all be letting them be on that bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Letting them jump off shit and eat sweet stuff whenever they ask for it and have ice cream before the dinner.
What's wrong with that? What are you talking about? So what's the bullshit? So we allow children to explore and enjoy their natural environment. Now, the sweet stuff, okay, gotcha. I'm with you on that, no. But you can have a little piece. You can't have a whole thing, but you have a little piece because 9 times out of 10, I'm going to have a little piece with you. So that's what the reason for that is. But the allowing them to be free and to trust themselves and to experience hurt, to learn their limitations sooner rather than later, and the ramifications of their actions sooner rather than later is what we do. It's like, okay, you want to jump off of that? Okay, jump. Now, I think I shared a video with you all. Little girl and her father, she was standing on the dresser, and he told her to jump. But she was like, I'm scared. He said, don't be. Trust yourself. Jump. I'm scared. Jump, baby. Jump. I got you. I'm going to catch you. And she jumped, and she made it to the bed where he actually caught her, and they just laughed about it. But it was a great lesson for her to not be fearful of things that she didn't understand, and that her father would always be there to support her. That was a great life lesson that she learned very early on in life. You know what I'm saying? Those things, I think, most of us are more open to than a good, not all, before y'all start commenting going crazy, than a good number of women are, because they understand that if that baby get hurt, they ain't going to have to take care of it. Like, I ain't got no damn time being on emergency room with your ass, and your stupid ass let them do it. Like, yes, we are stupid. I don't understand what y'all don't understand about that.
And that's my new T-shirt right there, and your stupid ass let them do it. Please get that on the T-shirt. Please, if you get dot, 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 and your stupid ass let them.
Stupid ass let them do it. Right.
With apostrophe E-M, so it's not him or her. Stupid ass let them do it. And so that's our new money. That's our new money shirt. So get it handled, and we can get rid of it.
Okay. I got you. I'm gonna call my cousin right after the show. We'll get that cranking. But yeah, so
I would say that I think that women, I think that in today's time, I think a lot of women have vitriol towards men because they really don't have a lot of good relationships with men in general. And so, you know, as I was telling you, Lee, when we talked about the older brother who right away, it was an assumption that he did something wrong based off of women just not having good relationship with men. And most of it is based off of trauma, whether it's parental or it's some kind of sexual trauma, rape, molestation, et cetera. Women don't have a lot of good relationships with men. And when you don't have a lot of good relationships with men, whether you end up having, when you start producing children, it does not change that. It does not change that. And it's almost as if some women, especially, you know, you carry your baby for 9 months, the baby's in your womb, you're protecting this baby, you're eating all of the right things, hopefully, and not everyone, but you guys get the gist of what I'm saying. It is kind of crazy to have a woman do all of that closeness and bonding with this baby, and then the first word the baby says is, Tanda. Now, Roger said, because they don't know how to say nothing else, but that could be part of it. It could be like, yo, the baby said, I've been 9, 10 months with you. I'm sick of your shit. Hey, Dad, you seem a lot cooler.
Phonetically, that is easier, by the way. Da-da is actually easier to say than ma. The muscle related is different, and what we're talking about with da-da is just the roof, tongue roof action. With ma, you asking for whole lip coordination and the idea of knowing the whole, you know, whole push breath without pushing it out of your mouth. Mama is just harder to say, period. But you know what's
right.
Even harder to say? You know what's even harder to say is no. No. And that's what I think we should be teaching kids, not mama or dada. No.
No?
No. No.
Oh, wow.
We need to teach children to say no. And
I
then
think
we
I've
say,
seen plenty of children saying no to things that they should be doing these days.
Yeah, no,
we
should
be.
And then we say why. And then look, and then that's when we say, look, that's how they taught me. And then we say why. And then they give you a reason why. And then we have to tell them why the answer must be yes. We don't get to just snatch their ass and say, no, yes, snatch. Come on, the answer is yes. We have to say, no. No, why? Why? You don't want to eat that? Why? You're going to eat this damn shit. We don't have to do it. You know, this is the new way of getting children
The problem with Americans is we're giving children too many goddamn choices. This is what Americans, we pussyfying these damn kids now. We give them too many damn choices. Oh, you get to ask questions. What the hell you get to ask questions of kids?
Right.
You don't get to ask questions of kids.
So I was thinking to myself, why do we have such a deficit? Why do we have such a deficit between black and white children in the classroom? You know why? Because white children say no, and then their parents ask why. And then their
children come up with
a reason why. And they talk it out for why something must be. In black households, is yes and no. Why? Because what? I said what? I said so. And that's the reason why.
Because that's not true. That's a limiting reality. Well, Rasha, you being an educator, you know that's not why we have deficit in education. You know that our children, before they get to white kindergartens, are ahead developmentally than white children. And so they're still having that thing happen at home.
Because
the
their parents ask them why.
No. They are the same from birth to 4 or to 5 before they enter the classroom, and our children are ahead. Now you ask why we're behind in the classroom. That's not the case. The reason why our kids are behind in the classroom is typically their first encounter with a white person educating them is in kindergarten. That white person don't understand them and don't teach them with love and understanding. Our way of loving and understanding is not appeasement. I think that we try to teach children appeasement these days and wonder why we get the results that we get. We don't need to teach them appeasement. We need to teach them boundaries. We need to teach them that there are cans and can't, but we also need to teach them that with love. And when you remove love, because that's how they learn and excel so much quicker at the daycares that they go to and the preschools with black educators, they're being taught by family in a sense, not by a stranger or a total stranger. School, the public school system, or even some of the private schools for us, is just a business transaction, and our children can sense that. They feel other when they're in the classroom. They don't feel called upon. And by the way, the expectations from white folks, they have lower expectations for our children. So they don't teach them to the best of their ability. They teach them to the lowest ability because that's what they think about them. That's what that's about. Now, as far as asking a child or explaining, I think explanation should always be in reason, for sure, for sure. You always want to educate your child, but at the same time, I agree with Brother Lee. We don't typically give democracy when it comes to parenting. You have to kind of age into democracy. When you're a child, you're operating off dictatorship, and that has never hurt or stunted our growth in education. As a matter of fact, it has prevented a lot of the pitfalls of the criminal justice system if you don't teach this at a younger age, because it's harder to teach them when they become teenagers. At that point, they're already set.
That's right. That's right. And again, it goes back to your point, Rashi, about because I said so. And unfortunately, the reality of our situation is different than their situation. The reality of our situation is there are more moments in which you must conform at the drop of a dime because you are told to do so. But though you being that ability to conform in that moment will literally save your life, where these white kids don't have to pivot on those moments, and they can ask why, and they can challenge, and they can do this, that, and the third. We've seen enough video evidence of that where a black person was arrested and or beaten for behavior that is nowhere near what we've seen white folks being just move along, asked to move along, or restrained. We go back to it all the time. It's as simple as Dylann Roof. They took this motherfucker to eat. He just killed seven people. They took his ass to eat because he was hungry. A brother whom had a bench warrant for a traffic ticket, was shot while fleeing on foot. He was shot. How does that add up? There's a huge difference between us. And there's a reason that we have to impress upon our children those differences. So it may seem corporal, it may seem harsh, but the realities are it's a different way of life for us here in America. And we cannot just allow that to be disputed. And we should not, dismissed. And we should not allow it to be forgotten or dismissed or played to like it doesn't matter. Fuck, it does matter. It does matter because you've never had to sit your child. You said you have 10, 11-year-olds. They're pretty close if they already have it to having the conversation. And you have never had to sit your child down and say, if the police come to you and do this, that, and the third, you need to do this. I need you home. I want you to live through the experience. Forget the abuse. Forget the name call. Whatever. As long as you live, that's the most important thing. And they've not had to experience that. They have no clue of what that is, what that feels like, what that looks like. None whatsoever. So there is a difference. And there's nothing wrong with that difference. There's nothing wrong with that difference as long as we're still operating in this society. At the level that this society plays us to, we have to always be on the checkerboard, not the chess. I'm sorry, the chessboard, not the checkerboard. We have to be on the checkboard.
You have to understand, Lee, the tenets of brain development, what type of interactions grow brain, what type of discussions connect neural tissue. If you don't begin to ask for knowledge and push logic and ask for some type of reasoning out of young minds, especially as soon as they are able to verbalize, you are wasting valuable time. And so if you don't have a questioning child, meaning they're not already asking you questions, you definitely want to start asking them questions, lots and lots, forcing them to come with logic and reasoning that will help you shape a child that will follow instinctively instead of always wondering why they have to follow without any type of reasoning or logic. for which they have to go by. They just got to follow you because you said so. Because you said so is powerful, and it worked for a while. But I want to tell you that a lot of cognitive difference in the early mind is because some children are allowed to ask why, and other ones just cannot. They cannot. They can't say no. They can't say why no. They can't ask why yes, and they just have to keep acting within the script that was given to them by their family, because that is how we do it. And so instead of them being able to create a reality from themselves, that their brain power. And so that's the difference. I'm just telling you some of the difference. And you can bring all the existential factors that come in later if you want to, yes. But that initial brain connection is a family duty. Family duty, not the rest of
the world. Rashi, no matter how much that is recited, that is all in theory. It does not equate in practice. And the one thing that I would say about in today's time is that we're inundated with so much information that has not been vetted. Literally, someone get paid to do a study. They have a limited amount of people that they test the study upon. It makes sense when you look at it in a vacuum, but when you look at it overall, it's almost saying that there's something inherently wrong with us and the way that we parent our children compared to whites. When you really look at it, we're now parenting our children as closely to white families today than what we were before, and we're more behind. So how are we more behind, and you're saying it's better, and then you say, well, hey, go to the deeper part of the pool. You just need to swim out there. You're drowning, I know. But I promise you, if you're drowning in 6 feet of water, if you get to the 10 feet of water, you'll do better. That's essentially what we're constantly saying, because we rather attack every essence of what the issue is versus white supremacy. And so it's easier to just say, oh, it's just black folks. And we do it in all phases. We typically say what's wrong with us versus what's happening wrong to us. We don't talk about what's happening because it's a harder conversation. It's harder to move the needle. So then we'll typically say, okay, well, let's just give our children more access. See, that's the problem. If we talk better to our children, then they would respond in a better way. That doesn't always equate to that. Well, how do we know? Because we have more children talking back to their parents, cursing their parents out. We have more black children killing their parents today than we ever had in the past. How many stories are you hearing about this? And once again, everybody has this reason where they're saying, hey, well, because it's the way we parent. We ain't even parenting the way we used to. We're not. And every seat that we hear, every conversation, literally, we're not parenting as much as we used to. We only have we have a predominant one-parent household. And so that mother or that father is typically at work 85% of the time. They're hardly even having a conversation with their child. So it's a lot of factors, and I don't believe that just teaching our children no is the thing. I think it's access to family. I think it's better coaching. I also think it's better boundaries, and also teaching them how to socialize with etiquette laced with it. Those are the things that we're lacking. We need to go find the things that we gave up and implement them back into our households. But we won't do that because our egos are attached to the ideologies and the theories that we bought into. So instead of getting out of that, we just go deeper. It's no different, Rashi, than what we see in schools. Schools go spend money on curriculum, and even if the curriculum is failing the children, they'll say that there's something wrong with the children and the families versus there's a problem with the curriculum that they spend $250,000 on. So they'll go from 5 to 10 years with this losing curriculum, never wanting to change it, keep telling their staff, keep teaching in this fashion. See, it's neither, you guys need to go deeper. See, it's because of you. Oh, no, you got to fit this. Well, guess what? You got your curriculum from Maine. The children in Maine are a lot different than the kids in inner city Chicago. They're a lot different than the kids in Kansas City. And by the way, they're from an affluent part of Maine. So they don't have some of the behavior issues. They don't even have some of the poverty and cultural issues that those children have. And I say that all the time. We have to get out of the access of theory. We're so heavily influenced in conversation and everything that we do in theory, in morality, and not in practice. We never say, well, we tried this, and how is it working? We'll try a failed thing 1,000 times over just because it makes us feel better. No matter what the cost is, it's all about it's feeling good and it looks right versus it being right.
Why is that, though? I mean, is it because we've gotten so lazy, or is it because we honestly, going back to what you said not too long ago, we honestly do not want to admit that these things are because of this other thing? Is it that? Is it that we've recognized and realized that we are not going to get over a hump until we get over the hump, which is racism and supremacy? Or is it we're just too damn lazy? We're scratching away at it.
We're doing all kinds of stuff to get over this hump. I don't know a venue. We understood what they said, health, education, economics, law, there's nine, entertainment, I keep forgetting, it's the Neely Fuller 9 or the Neely Fuller 11, I can't remember, but I know that there are tenets, right? We got people in black law trying to see about getting those people exonerated who were falsely imprisoned. We got black police officers trying to, well, some of them. I don't really know what's going down with the black police officer. I'm going to have to assume that there's a consortium of black police officers trying to keep, you know, some of that murder that killed them for the bench warrant type behavior down. We got black doctors trying to do something about, you know, how black people are treated at the hospital, which is atrocious, even all the way up to the maternity ward. We got people in education. And if you really want to know where the black woman is flexing, the black woman is flexing in education. She is doing her best to infiltrate some of these locations, these with my Elder Rodney calls these madrasas, where they are doing, you know, psychological damage by not incorporating our faces in white places. So we are putting, you know, definitely politically, we scraping and scrounging. Some of us are affiliating ourselves even with the boogeyman if we have to, in order to get ourselves in particular places so that we can be the next wave of politician, and not, you know, when people like Maxine and them finally put their papers down. So I don't see a venue of the American reality that we don't have black people trying to either make accolades within it or trying to, which is the hardest thing of all, change it from within.
But Lee, that goes back to theory again. It's about window dressing. Like, there's a level of what happens in practice versus what happens in theory. And I'll go back to it. It's things that we say versus how things actually are. We say we make these changes based off of having black people in those places. Yes, people get a lot of accolades for being the first black whatever. Statistically, we're taking steps back. So having them in those places are not just not good enough. You have to be in those places, and then you have to push back against the current paradigm. That's not happening, whether it's politics, whether it's education, whether it's even economics. We're not making that push. A lot of it, brother, goes back to the theme that we talk about so much on this show, relationships. We either don't have good intimate relationships or we don't have good relationships with each other. We're more in the business of assimilation. And assimilating into the system means destruction of blackness. It does not mean achievement. And I don't think that we really understand what achievement means. I'm not saying that everybody needs to speak in Ebonics. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that we should celebrate black failure. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that the achievement And the goals that we want should be the metrics that we set forth and not what white folks say is successful for us. Or it shouldn't be for that black class of folk who want to assimilate what they say. It should be the things that's going to push the needle forward, right? And when you really think about the things that push the needles forward, you have to have those, you need to have the necessities online. You have to be able to provide food, clothes, and shelter. You must have your own communities. You must have your own businesses. All of these things start, brother, with healthy families, healthy communities. It all starts there. Once we start and we hammer those things out and we get out of the theoretical jargon, because a lot of this is theoretical on our differences with men and women. A lot of it is things, we talk so much about male patriarchy, and then when we have these conversations, I talk to you, Lee, you talk about your mother and her relationship into running the family. I talk to Brother Rodney, he talks about his mother and his grandmother and their relationship in running the family. I talk about my mother and my grandmother and my aunties and their relationships in running the family. We talk about mostly women before we even get to a man. So where is this black male patriarchal rule that everybody's talking about? You talking about the church
that
many of us don't go to now? Are we talking about the churches that many of us don't even go to? So many of us are so removed from the church, and we're still talking about the church. So many of us are so removed from the mosque, and we're still talking about the mosque. But we don't talk about the places where we go to and get paychecks from where there's typically a white male patriarchal rule or a white woman who is in charge, and she's pushing the ideology of the white male. Matter of fact, some of the theories that we're saying that we want to feed our children come from those exact same places. Things that they will tell you to do with your kids that they won't never teach their kids. And so for me, I just always say, show it in practice. If what you're saying is good, me and my brother Mojasi, we argue all the time about his ideas in family science. And I say, brother, I respect you. I love you and your wife. But, hey, y'all kids run too wild around y'all house, and y'all got to tell them to stop too many times. I ain't have to whoop my kids a gazillion times to get them to stop. Yes, Rashi, I could use my voice. And, yes, we had a lot of conversations. But they knew the tool in the toolbox was, Dad is only going to speak so long before it's going to be some thunder and lightning. Now, I got three. I only had to whoop a total of four times. So it wasn't a lot of thunder and lightning, but there was examples that had to be made. Somebody had to have an example made out of them. It happens. And it's going to be there
I'm not a spirit of rider. I mean, I hit my children, but I also understood that it was some shit I was hitting them for because I was hit for. I'm like, it was just weird. It ain't even really my flex. I don't like to hit people. I prefer to have a conversation so fucking long that you would rather me hit you. Let's do that. Let's delve into why. Let's get into our choices and what we're going to do in the future. Let's set up a mock scenario where it happens again, and then you show me what you can do different. By the time I get through whooping that horse, it's hamburger meat, and they don't want to deal with that no more. They don't want to deal with a conversation where they have to change psychologically why they have to change, not because I said so, because this is not, you can't eat in the middle of the night. This is non-communal. You eat when we eat, unless you put your food to the side, and then you eat that when you want to. But you can't eat your portion and then come back through and eat again. Why? Okay, here's why. Because when you eat again, then there might be a limited amount of food, and then that means somebody else who also was hungry won't be able to eat again. Why? Because I don't have no money to feed you like that. But if you're interested in eating that much, me and you can start brainstorming on things you can do to make sure that you have food whenever you want it. Because this is the amount of food I can provide. It goes that hard. You have to admit, too, this is the amount of food my money buys. This is the amount of food your money buys, and you didn't buy nothing. Right. So this is how much you get to eat. This is how long
That's
you get to
That's why the pool boy got called on your ass. You be a
mean you know, do you understand what I'm saying? But this is the reality of the matter. But the other thing is we start raising people who feel like they should have their way. But when you ask them why, it is not because they want to. because I want to. Because I want to. That's it. And those because I want to people are supposed to be corrected at home. But that home behavior has to be addressed. Because I want to can't really be whooped out of you. It's something you got a couple with whoopings? Yeah, sometimes, yeah. But most of it is conversation. And I don't think we have enough conversations with our children. That's just it. I'm not saying it's always combo. But it's got to be more than what we're doing. It's got to be more because the logic train is off. The logic train don't run. Brother Rodney, help me out. I mean, maybe I am too far off. Brother Rodney, do you have anything to enlighten us with?
You called on the wrong person at the wrong time. He just fell off. You know, he's in the middle of transitioning for his event today. So, you called on the wrong person at the wrong time. He just rolled out. But
well, you know, Rashi, just remember, there's a power in silence. And parents in discussion can explain too much and overly explain. When I tell you it is what it is and I give an explanation, that's it. But why sometimes is a stall tactic. Students use it all the time, and so do kids, if they know they can get away with it. I watch an 8-year-old all the time do it with her mother, and her mother does all the explaining in the world, but the frustration and the stress that it puts on that parent to constantly keep on explaining and talking, and then when I say something one time, it gets done, and I don't do a lot of explaining, and I ain't the biological parent. So why is that? Everybody seemed to understand what I said once and will refuse to have more conversation on it. So I don't understand why we think that we have to kind of understand. The other thing is comprehension. I believe that we were raised with a level of comprehension that some of these kids just don't have because everybody's asking to break it down to the most smallest compound. I think some things you have to learn. You have to learn, and your parents shouldn't have to say too much. It is not about you not learning. You will learn. And some lessons, honestly, if we're being real, some lessons, it may take you a lifetime to understand. Verbiage don't always get it. Verbiage doesn't always explain it clearly for folk. Life experiences do. So I think sometimes we have to get out of inundating our children with so much information, and we just need to set guidelines, expectations, and rules around the home as well as in life. Very simple rules, but the ones that will get them far. That's my last point on that piece.
Luckily, I'm done with that phase. My son is about to head on off to college soon. So the worst I got to deal with now is my granddaughter. You know what I'm saying? And I'm ready for the hurt, too.
What school is he looking at?
The one who gives him the fullest ride. He don't really care about it, honestly. He really don't care about the process of education. He thinks it's a racket. He's noticed the repetitive nature of the information, and he's already in the AP classes, right? He tested to get the community college. They said he was in 100 level. So he get up every day and go to school because he want to. Or I don't know. So at this point, I'm like, what you going to do? And he said, I'm just keep going to high school. It's cheaper. It's easiest. It's something we doing right now. And I'll do that until we do something different. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Ain't no wrong with that.
And the schools want his numbers. They want his statistical data so bad. They done came cooked up a whole education program for him where he get to do art all morning, and then he take his AP classes in the afternoon. So the district I'm in is recognizing that if you really have done what you're supposed to do, you don't have to be in our system for 12 years. You should be able to come on up out of there, which is sad to me, but at least they recognize it, right?
I don't even know where to go after that. So I wanted to talk, because we have like 15 minutes left of the show. So the House GOP does have a leader. Their leader is pushing for a clash with the Senate and the GOP and the Senate because he has approved three bills to keep the government afloat. He wants to have a clean spending bill with money not going to the Ukraine attached, so he's approved a separate spending bill for money going to Israel, but not money going to Ukraine. What really wanted Rodney at the segment, but it's okay, I can handle it. So my issue with that, I understand the money. I totally do. But I also understand the reality of boots on the ground. Now, Israel is an ally of ours. If money doesn't go to Israel, for Israel to defend, whatever you feel about that, then the potential arises that you will need American ground. Now, Israel versus Palestine. For too long, the Israelis have had their foot on the necks of the Palestinians. Do I think that the attack on Israel was appropriate by Hamas? No, I do not. However, I do understand and recognize what other actions could they take. So while I'm not being emotionally attached to the situation is neither here nor there for me, but why I'm not leaning toward Hamas, because, again, I don't believe that they represent government of the Palestinian people. I am under the direction of something in that region needed. And desperate people make desperate. As we said a gazillion times, wasn't desperate people. Not that we say that desperate people make desperate decisions. Hurt people hurt people. And this is what happened. Yeah. And I hope that through this, there will come and better understand both nations and respect for both nations. Because Israel damn sure invaded the West Bank and started setting up. They started expanding, and that's not right.
Well, we can't say nothing, We can't say nothing. We did the same thing.
Oh, yeah,
the United States is the same type of land acquisition. And so what do we say to them? How could we say anything?
No, the United States can't say anything, but we can damn sure. You know, I mean, I speak often about the Hawaiian Islands. I mean, Hawaii was its own nation. We took over the sovereignty of a nation under the guise of the Pearl Harbor attack. We took over the sovereignty of a nation. It was a country before we got there. A country. We signed an agreement to utilize its port system for our military, and when it was attacked, we took over the sovereignty of the Hawaiian Islands. That wasn't a fucking state. That was a nation. Islands. Remember, there's more than one island in Hawaii. We took over the sovereignty of a whole damn nation under the guise of the Pearl Harbor. You know what I'm saying? But us amongst ourselves can say whatever we want to say. The United States government may not be weak. Again, when you're talking about hurt people, people who have lived under the foot of the Israelis forever, yo, something got to go. Something was going to happen. Again, did not wish this, did not think this was going to be the thing, but something was going to happen. And unfortunately, this was the something that happened. But it could only be held off but for so long. So,
like,
I
isn't there a Muslim? Because I know Jerusalem is kind of like their the Jewish Mecca, you know, whatever.
The Palestinian
But the Muslims have theirs somewhere else, right? It's in Saudi Arabia or something like that, or the Emirates. Where's the big black box at?
You talking about where Muslims make the pilgrimage to Mecca?
Yeah.
that kind of is in Saudi Arabia.
It's in Saudi Arabia. Okay. So they don't necessarily share, like, it's not Muslim holy land, right?
You talking about Palestine?
Right. It's not Palestinian or Muslim holy land.
No. Palestine is not Islamic holy land. No.
Right. But the Israelis set it up to where it is their actual holy land. Sacred holy land.
Yes. Yes, Israel is considered the holy land.
So you are even going even for real be able to, if you just living somewhere, right, and somebody saying you are occupying my church, my temple, you got to go. You can't even say, man, I was just right here. When did it become a temple? They say it became a temple in 1948. And so you was like, okay, how do you argue with people who say that this is their holy sacred land?
Well, I think the best way to do it, in my opinion, is to really talk about it from the aspect of we're talking about Europeans, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
We're talking about second, third generation Europeans and not those from 3,000 years ago. And somehow the conversation is always equated back to that. And let's be honest, Judaism, Islam, as well as Christianity, while they are theological religions, it doesn't always mean that everyone agrees with them. The Palestinians, because they were occupied by the British, they were forced to take them in. And that's really where it starts. No different than in America where we got Native American burial land, and they go and they sue and they get you off their burial land. That's how the Palestinians feel. Now, neither one of the groups are indigenous to that area. They're both fighting over land that belonged to Africans. That's just fact. That's historical fact. That's nothing that anyone's making up. But they do reside there now. And I just have a hard time. The situation that I have with Hamas, as much as we talk about Hamas, we skip over the fact that Hamas was created by the Israelis to take on PLO. And that's something that no one ever talks about. So this is Israel's Frankenstein that they're dealing with. They can try to punish the Palestinians all they want to, but they created Hamas to deal with the PLO. And that makes it an Israeli problem, which it should not be falling on the backs of the Palestinians. And no, they should not keep trying to grow these settlements. Netanyahu is a warmonger, and he's also a bigot. And that's just what that boils down to. And we almost talk about Jewish folks as if they are perfect people. And at the end of the day, that's not the case. But I would say to any of us, we have to choose our battles wisely, because we've seen what happened with Brother Kanye West. Whether you speak correctly, incorrectly, Kyrie Irving is another one. Correctly or incorrectly, we know that they like to step on and punish those who can't. If you need proof, look at what they're saying about the students who are speaking out against this war. They have a lobby where they're trying to make sure that these students, black, white, and others, will never be able to get employed in this country as a lawyer. That is something that I feel like that's where the standing up needs to take place. In America, we need to check them here for that before we can begin to talk about what's happening over in Israel. Because we can't ask people to speak up, and then when they get punished for speaking up, we as a collective don't come together and rally around them and give them some protection for their amendment rights that are afforded to them here in this country.
I do agree. BB is a demon.
BB
is an outright demon. I mean, the man, and when I celebrated when they ousted him, when they put him out the chair, I was like, ding dong, the wicked witch warlock is gone. And how do you get put out of the seat for war crimes? You're right. For being just a straight up social demon and then find yourself back in the chair. We need to understand the type of maneuvering. that can put that type of demonic behavior back into power, chair power. Who is his puppeteer? Because somebody had put him out. And I need y'all to hear this. Netanyahu does not have the full backing of the Zionist government with him. There are people in his nation who do not like what he does. They don't like how he operates. But they are silent, just like Russian people are when they go against Putin. So just know that this is a power issue, and that there are some Jews, there are some Ashkenazi Jews who are not on board with Bibi Netanyahu.
I don't think they're silent for the same reasons as the Russians are, and I got to be mindful because we have 4 minutes left to show. I think they're more silent because an election is coming up and they want to win the election, and they don't want to piss any of the survivors off whom lost family members of the attack. So this is a political move, yes, on both sides. It boggles my mind how the Israeli intelligence agencies were not warning everybody and their mama about this attack. We all know how good they are doing their damn jobs, and for nobody to have seen anything possible coming, that's a problem. It's a huge problem. But, you know, this is being sold the same way the 9/11 is being sold. And it's funny how, not funny as in ha ha hee hee, but I'm funny by ironic. It's ironic how both of these things are happening to people in a position that, a weakened position, that as they go into an election year, but neither of them seemingly knew anything. Brother Rodney commented in the chat that our government agency told them, the Egyptians told them, it's being reported. So more and more information is coming out. Now, the thing about this is, are the Israeli people going to turn on Netanyahu at the ballot box? Because what you have not heard is the fact that they were warned by the U.S. and the Egyptians that something was imminent. What you have heard and what you have seen is the television screen, the radio, whatever, is flooded with, you know, pray for Israel, pray for Israel, pray for Israel, Israel this, Israel that. As you said, Brother Barry, you know, folks trying to make the Israelis out like they are a perfect people, and they are nowhere near that. So time will tell, and our time is almost up, 2 minutes left. I want to thank you all for today. You know, I wanted to make it light, but I wanted to make it honest, and I think we made a good run at being light and honest today. Brother Barry, man, you getting up earlier is a great thing for us. You be running, Jack. You like, look, I'm already in the mood. I got my research all together. Thank you, bro. Thank you, Sister Rashi. I appreciate you. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what you did with the baby today. Did you give it to Sleepy Juice? Because normally she wanted to make her appearance known up on the show. You get that baby some Sleepy Juice. I'm going to come
I
get you.
I spent all night
you
with her. I bathed her and kissed her and hugged her and loved her. I give my grandma time, man, somehow. I do it somehow. You can
do it
pawpaw time, being too, man.
Okay. Well, Brother Rodney is on the move because this is the soft opening of a multicultural bookstore out in Vegas. So they are going to have a corner dedicated to his mentor, Sam Smith, and he's going to donate one book from the Our Own Voices Reading Club. He's asking that we get recommendations from everybody as to what books they should include into the Sam Smith Reading Corner. So, folks, if you want to hit us on social media, please let us know what your thoughts are, and we'll take it up from there. We'll make sure it is. Rodney, we got a couple of seconds. You want to say something real quick?
Read to your children and make sure that your children have it. Read to your children and make sure you can have at least 10 books in their personal reading library.
All right, love y'all. Be good. Be safe. Until next week. Peace.